Hey everyone, coming up in this episode, the buzz is all about Race Through New York with Jimmy Fallon, a little band called Walk the Moon, as well as some Halloween Horror Nights information because, well, it's still October. And we're also going to talk about Kong, Skull Island, really briefly. All of that right before JL takes us on her family's guide to World Expo in Universal Studios, Florida. Also, we're going to do the Monster Mash. Why not? It's a graveyard smash. Live from the Bob Varley Studio, this is the Universal Edition of The Diz Unplugged. This is episode 63 of the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition. The Diz Unplugged Universal Edition is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect universal vacation. Visit them on the web at www.dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hey everyone, welcome to our spooky Halloween episode. God, JL, just... all right, 2 seconds in. It's everyone out there who's listening to this. No, you did not just get a text message on your iPhone. That was Jenny Lynn Knopp. Well, Jenny Lynn Knopp's not actually here today. So did I introduce myself yet?
No.
Or did I get distracted? I am your spooky host for today.
Ooh.
I'm going to use the word spooky like 6 or 7 times.
That's going to be the drink word.
Yeah. So if you are playing a drinking game along to the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition, which I always never recommend to anyone because, well, whatever word you choose or whatever idiosyncrasy that we put on that causes you to drink, just, you know, take a step back. You don't need to do that. But,
okay.
Spooky. I am your host, Craig Williams, and today I am joined by everyone's favorite person in the Scooby-Doo gang, Velma.
Hello, everyone. Zoinks, or something like that.
Oh, God.
What? Isn't that, that's a thing they say.
That's the thing Shaggy says, yeah.
All right, well, I'm not Shaggy, but Velma doesn't say anything. She just shakes her finger at everyone.
Yeah, Velma, did I just say Velma?
It is Velma.
Thelma.
It's not Thelma, it's Velma. Yeah.
Thelma and Louise.
Louise.
Thelma, oh, yeah.
Thelma drove off a cliff. Velma chased monsters in the Mystery Machine. Okay.
And then back on the controls, associate producer in our hearts and...
Where up?
Spider-Man himself, Rhino Clavin.
Yeah, you can't see... You can't tell I'm wearing a full body outfit right here.
You guys, he's in a onesie.
Kind of superfluous, I guess.
Yeah, he's... it's just so everyone is aware...
this is not a hoodie.
I can stand
yeah,
up, but...
especially for everyone who's listening, obviously... there are some Halloween costumes being worn right now. I am not wearing a Halloween costume. I am wearing my Michael Myers Halloween shirt. Because it is very spooky. Jenny Lynn is dressed up as Velma from Scooby-Doo, as I already said. And then in the back, Rhino is wearing a Spider-Man onesie that is not a costume. It is his actual pajamas.
These are his PJs.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, they got pockets in the side, in the hood. And... that I can put shoes on.
I'm pretty sure that this show has the most awkward introductions of any shows that we do, and that's hard to beat the trip.
These pajamas were the best investment I ever made.
Fantastic. Pajamas are universal.
There you go.
I didn't hear the outro music there, but whatever. Yeah, we have a huge episode today. A lot of buzz happened this week, and I think... the most important part of the show is our segment that we're going to be talking about this week, Your Family's Guide to World Expo.
Thanks.
It's been a while since the last one, I think only like a month or two, but we did Family's Guide to New York. Obviously, it's awesome, awesome information for anyone coming with that wide range of ages with their kids. I know yours are now Ellie's, she's 10 now, right?
11.
She's 11
she
now.
Just turned 11. It's crazy business up in this piece. 11, 13, and 15.
11, 13, 15?
Ellie is 11.
Oh, okay.
Miller
I was going to say.
Is 13.
I was like,
that's the day I'm getting married.
Oh, that's weird. That is. No, Ellie's 11, Miller's 13, and Margot is 15.
You know, it wasn't weird. That was spooky.
Yeah, that was very spooky. Yeah, so you run the whole gamut in terms of ages with your kids. I mean, you don't have a toddler, but I'm not wishing that upon you at the same
time.
Thanks,
I appreciate that.
The content's not worth in the long run, and plus, we just have to wait too long unless you adopt. I guess.
Yeah, I think you'll be the next one up to be bringing a toddler into the game plan.
Nah, definitely Rhino.
I've got two corgis.
Well, because that's the same thing.
You can do the Dog's Guide to Universal, coming soon to a Universal website near you.
How to vacation with your pet. No? All right.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to write that down for the staff.
That's a great segment for the trip.
That was the first thing I said when I started working here was, we should do a segment about how you travel with your dog.
Well,
yeah, someday. Someday.
We'll get there.
I have friends that I ditch my dog off on.
Someday, Artie and Rocket.
So, yeah, you're going to want to definitely stay tuned or, give us a half an hour and then come back and tune back in to watch the Family's Guide. But, before we get to that, of course, we have the buzz. And let's just jump right into that buzz.
Yeah, let's get buzzing.
So the first and most obvious thing that we're going to talk about in the buzz, if you didn't figure it out yet, but... We've been talking about it for a while, but Twister is finally leaving us forever on November 2nd.
November 2nd, it's all done.
Yes, meaning that it is closing on November 1st, this Sunday, this very Sunday. So if you're listening to this on Monday, you're already too late. Why didn't you pay attention any sooner? But it's gone as of Monday, November 2nd. And why is that? Reported before, following the rumors that we found on other Disney websites, but Universal websites that really go crazy on rumors, there is in fact a Jimmy Fallon attraction coming.
Sorry,
there.
The rumors are true.
Jinkies.
What?
That's her thing. Somebody just messaged me. Jinkies is what Velma says.
Oh, jinkies. Okay, yeah. So that will be my word for today.
Yeah, that's what you could have said in response to it. For the next buzz.
I'll do it over again. Hey, I'm Velma, Jinkies.
What's that attraction coming, Craig?
Race Through New York, starring Jinkies. Jimmy Fallon. I'm not sure that Jinkies is appropriate in this age and day. Okay. I don't know what it means, but...
It's Throwback Thursday, Craig. Go with it.
Did they talk about... True. I knew this announcement was getting made. Like, I saw it happening, but I didn't actually watch the details of it. Did they give...
The deets?
Yeah, the deets. Yeah. Was it vague, or...
I would like to throw it over to JL just real quickly, if she wants to talk a little bit about it, because she already did get to talk about it on Fox News yesterday.
I was on Fox last night reporting about it. And, you know, we don't have any real big details, but what we do know is that it's going to be a 4D attraction simulator attraction.
Oh, so smell like garbage, like the streets.
That's what we're looking forward to.
Just kidding, I love New York, guys.
And obviously, it's based off of Jimmy Fallon's show. And in his show, he does the celebrity races in his studio. So this is going to, where the celebrities, they go and they kind of tour through his studio. Well, this is going to be a tour similar to that, but... I'll give you an overview of New York instead of just the studio. It's supposed to take you from the depths of the subways to the heights of the skyscrapers. And it's all a lot of good fun. I think maybe a good way to describe it is how other people have said it might be like the universal equivalent to Soarin' Over California.
Have they said whether... I'm sure they didn't, but the... So we're assuming the ride contraption is going to be, the vehicle is going to be like that kind of suspended.
Well, there's not a lot of space there for an erector type set, so it's probably just going to be stationary.
I'm wondering if they're going to try and go the Shrek 4D route.
No, I don't believe that at all. So
maybe more like Despicable Me?
It's a very, even that I kind of at first I was like maybe, but it is a very, it's a tall building. Despite it not looking big, it is pretty tall. So we're not talking that it has to be on that depth of Soarin', because Soarin' literally takes place in giant IMAX screens.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is trying to wrap you up in it like that. We already have the Simpsons ride over in World Expo that really wants to enwrap you like that. And think about it, stuff like stuff like Gringotts as well as Forbidden Journey have been able to take those experiences where you can still go into that screen, as well as Transformers and Spider-Man, without needing to completely surround you in that element using actual different props and then the 4D effects, as it said there. So I do think it is going, just because of the limitations on how much room there is, I do think it's going to be a stationary simulator, similar to something like Simpsons or Despicable Me. However, I do think that the rumors are probably going to end up being true, and it is going to utilize some newer type of, not a Soarin' knockoff, but some newer type of flight simulator technology. Because one of the main manufacturers of their attractions, I believe their dynamic attractions, I follow them on Twitter, but they don't post that often. But they have tweeted out pictures of their type of flight simulator in the past before, and signs like that lead you to speculate that, yeah, maybe that this is why they started posting that, because they knew that they were going to use this technology and implement it into Jimmy Fallon. But then again, I believe they also posted pictures, the same company, they posted pictures of a new prototype of a Back to the Future ride that we'll probably never get, which would be awesome if we did. So,
I think the main similarity between that and Soarin' over California would just be the concept that, you know, Soarin' gives you an overview of California, and this is supposed to give you an overview of New York City.
Yeah. And I got a little snarky on Twitter about this. We've talked about it on this show before. I am not the biggest Jimmy Fallon fan at all. And I'll just leave that at that. Something like Soarin', I do think it's an amazing experience, and you really do feel like you're being put into this environment. But because Universal has gotten so heavy on simulators and just 4D, 3D attractions in general, it's starting to make people a little weary and kind of just taken aback by adding more of this technology. And in this case, I can give it a pass for something like Gringotts, where, you know, it's not a real place. So they create the environment. The same thing goes with Hogwarts. They created that environment that they played on the video screens as you're going through. Transformers, Spider-Man, same deal. However, whenever you come to here, this is literally a 4D attraction that's going to take you through New York. Something that, you know, you might not be able to get the same perspective that they will from making a simulator type video of it. But at the same time, anyone can just go to New York and have that experience. Why do you need? And yeah, I shouldn't be speaking like this because it's not out yet. It could end up being amazing. But why not use this technology whenever you're looking to make a more of a fantasy place that you can't actually go to in real life?
I can't
use the technology then.
I think it seems like they're trying to do the route of, like, it's in the soundstage, so it'll be like you're going into the studio, and it's in New York, the New York of Universal, and like it. So,
well, no, you're in Studio 6B in New York.
Yeah,
not in the New York at Universal.
Wait, where? But I thought Twister was in the New York area.
Yes, but I'm a little confused now.
Both the attraction and the actual attraction are in New York,
yes.
Right? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So, like, you're going into a studio. You're going into an actual soundstage at Universal Studios, and then which is the ride theme is that you're going into a soundstage at a studio. So I think it's just them trying to keep that movie making production thing alive. You know what I mean? A part of this place. I understand what you're saying, though, about it being like it should be somewhere where you step into a different world and stuff like that. But I think maybe this is their way of like throwing back to that. But I also think it's interesting that it's New York, and they say they're going into like the subway and a studio, and then skyscrapers. Like, so I imagine this ride's going to play with space a lot, especially since it's not a very big. I mean, you said it's tall, but it's generally not like thought of as a huge building, but like, you know, I'm thinking subways are cramped and small, and studios are very cramped and small. Cause I went to the, I'm wearing the shirt, the Jimmy Kimmel, and that was a lot smaller than I imagined it was going to be on the inside. So like, it'll be interesting to see if they like are incorporating that into this space somehow and play with that dimension.
I don't understand what you mean. You mean like incorporating some kind of track?
No, but like playing with your perspective and the room in the same way that like Spider-Man The ride makes you feel like you fly up a building and then get dropped down a building, but you're also in that ride, you're in like an alleyway. And I understand that is a moving thing, but it would be interesting if this tries to like play with your perception of space a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's just trying to say,
okay.
And sorry if I'm just repeating what you're saying, but you're just saying that something that is bigger, wider, almost like a Soarin' or Simpsons ride, where it's that massive scale, that's not actually going to give you an authentic experience to what it's like being in a cramped studio or going through Subway.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it would be interesting to use the simulator in that way.
Yeah.
Like, to be like, here we are, and we're in a Subway. We're tight with people. We're in a studio. And then it opens up into an now we're in the skyline. So it would be kind of cool if it takes you through that, like, to tight, to, like, you know, wide open. I don't know.
No,
that's my hope.
It still has potential, regardless of the fact that Jimmy Fallon is in it, and he's only funny 1% of the time.
I'm assuming he's going to get hurt at some point while they're filming it or something, because he fell again the other day. Like, this guy is, like, he is having a rough go.
His fingers and hands are all covered up. The one thing that does show promise with this attraction, and I said in the blog post that we wrote about it, but the creative director on the attraction and the one who was the one who announced it via Universal's official blog is none other than Jason Sorrell. Who he started his career with Halloween Horror Nights over at Universal before becoming an Imagineer for over 10 years. And he's written some amazing books. He does like the Haunted Mansion from the attraction to the movie book, as well as a Pirates of the Caribbean one. He wrote one about the Disney Mountains. And, you know, he's just, as an Imagineer, he was one of the ones that of recent who was very prominent, very in the light, and especially because he was an Imagineer out of Florida, everyone in Florida knew him extra well for that reason. He went back over to Universal, and this is the first attraction that he's worked on. And, you know, just based on some of the great things that he's pulled out of Disney, I feel like coming over to Universal, where they're eager to throw money at everything, they're eager to just get these new projects off the ground and, you know, in front of people as fast as possible. And
although this one's not going to be moving as fast as the other ones, this one's not coming out till 2017.
It's still extremely quick. That's literally.
But I feel like I guess that is. But I mean, I'm just thinking about things like, you know, Transformers went up like
Mine Train took 5 years, but Transformers was a cookie cutter ride. They already did it in two other places.
How long did Transformers take?
From the time they started construction on it, it was 12 months. But from the time they announced that they were doing it, it was 7 months.
Okay, but yeah, I was going to say, but it didn't. There wasn't a ride already there. They took space that had nothing in it, right?
Yeah, I think everything had already been cleared out of the sound stages where it was at.
Yes.
But that's not the hard part. The whole reason why they could put Transformers in so quickly is because, again, it's just a replica of the other two tracks that they've already built for. Mm-hmm. So they already knew what they were doing. It's kind of like a dark ride over at Disney. If it's just a replica, they can get it up
quick. They have the blueprints and everything done.
Yeah, that's already done. It's just about building and paying your workers well enough that they'll build around the clock and get it done. And that's what they did for Transformers. And they still do it to this day. That's why Skull Island has gone up so quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And heck, who knows? It could even beat its summer deadline of summer 2016. They have Fast and Furious coming in 2017, as well as now Jimmy Fallon thrown in the mix, too. You have Volcano Bay. You have Sapphire Falls being completed for spring.
Well, I wasn't accusing them of being lazy.
Well, this seems to be kind of the ripple effect of that announcement they made in May about being like one new attraction, per park, per thing. Yeah, so it's kind of cool. And we still haven't even heard what they're doing with Nintendo yet. So think about all that stuff you just said. Plus, there's something else going on that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah.
I mean, we know, but I'm sure there's something other than Nintendo in the works as well.
Oh, no. I know Nintendo is on the fast track, too. They are going to start moving into development on that sooner than I think people even expected. And then there's still one more project out there that people are expecting will get announced to either open in 2017 or 2018, too, which just is mind-boogling to me that they would potentially open up another, a third attraction in 2017. But if anyone's going to do it right now, it's Universal. So
they're making a statement.
They are. Yep. So long story short, Race Through New York with Jimmy Fallon coming. We will keep you updated as new details do come out on it. And if you're in Orlando right now, go over and experience Twister one last time. Rhino and I are, I think tomorrow morning, we're actually going to go there to try to start filming our tribute video to it. I mean, obviously, we only have 3 days after today.
Our tribute video is Craig and I will be recreating the opening between Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton. I will be playing the part of Helen Hunt. He will be the part of Bill Paxton hating me on the other TV screen.
I feel like we could just film the actual attraction and more people would enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
I mean, in the long run, 10 years from now, no one's going to care about us. Let's be real.
Oh.
Hey, that's how it goes.
That's a spooky little thing you just said there.
Spooky.
Well, our next story is real spooky.
Our next story is real spooky because we're going to talk about Halloween Horror Nights. And we're not going to go on too long about this. We're actually going to keep it somewhat brief. You know, of course, we have to throw in something Halloween related on this Halloween, the first show before we actually have real Halloween. And there's been a lot of negative press surrounding Halloween Horror Nights the past couple days, especially. Orlando Sentinel just posted an article, I believe yesterday or the day before, about a scare actor who, you know, he went straight to the police because of being kicked in the face, which to me, you know, geez, that's...
Who kicks somebody in the face?
That would hurt. I understand the scare actor, he was working in 25 Years of Monsters and Mayhem, so I'm guessing he was one of the...
So he was in a house. He wasn't in a scare zone.
Yeah, I'm guessing he was one of the ones in The Forsaken.
They're like, you know, whenever you...
What's that?
They're like low to the ground?
Yeah, the one is kind of right off to your right as soon as you go in the room and you're on the tilted path. The one, I mean, they're both pretty low. Yeah. So I could understand how something like that could happen there and you could kick someone either on accident or on purpose if they really scared you. But this is just one report after several others actually were made on social media from other scare actors saying that they were quitting in the last week going up to the finish of Halloween Horror Nights because they've been getting hit by guests. And
all in the same place, or are there different
places,
areas?
Everywhere. Yeah, the one I saw was from a girl who was playing a victim, like one of Jason's victims out in the scare zone.
Yeah, one of the counselors, yeah.
Yeah, so... I mean, that's just a scare zone, but people apparently were harassing her even in there. And this isn't...
She got punched in the face.
Yeah. This isn't something that is abnormal in general, because we've heard about it before, that people hit scare actors. Sometimes scare actors accidentally hit the guests that are there, too. It's unfortunate. I mean, it's happened to me this year alone, where they just got a little bit too close. One of the times I was walking through Werewolf, one of the person working the puppets was doing so well and getting so into it that they hit a person with the puppet on accident.
By accident. I would have died.
Completely. It was hilarious being back behind, because this girl's, like, freaking out, but... You know, stuff happens from time to time. However, these incidents now have been aggressive on behalf of the guests. And I can't remember what website wrote a kind of an in-depth look at it. If you're coming to Horror Nights, you know, there's two types of people. Ones that, you know, you have the fight or the flight. And that, you know, you see both of those, and then you see people who just don't care at Universal. And like JL, you would be a flight.
Clearly.
Rhino would be kind of that mix in between. He's a little bit don't care, a little bit flight.
Yeah.
I am straight up don't care. And the whole point that behind that article, and just in general, I think everyone should know it, but maybe the reason why we're bringing it up now is it's common sense. To anyone who listens to our show or knows anyone who wants to do these events but doesn't know how they'll react, if you think you're going to be a fighter, and if that's
maybe
your general reaction, you shouldn't be going.
Yeah, if when someone pops out behind something and your automatic reaction is a fist, like going out into, like, you should be like, okay, well, this probably isn't a good place for me. But you probably also, I don't want to say it. Never mind.
No, it's just in general. If that is your gut instinct, if you've ever been scared before by a friend, by something else, and you naturally say, okay, I'm going to hit you, even as like a joke right after, or just like, ah, like, regardless, don't go to this event. It's not for you. You're going to get arrested. And then you're going to have that record where, oh, yeah, you know, I got thrown out of a theme park, was given a trespass, and then also they're going to put a lawsuit against me for punching this actor. It's not worth it to pay whatever amount of money you're doing it if you're just going to go in and react like that. And I mean, the same goes for if you know you're going to be scared and there's that chance you don't know how you're going to react. Just in general.
My friend Nicole.
Don't.
Nicole, poor Nicole had a little panic attack in the first house.
She did.
God bless her. It was too spooky for her.
Like, I do. I feel really bad. I know the characters take a lot through this job. They really do. And it's unfair to them that they can be put in this situation.
It's crazy because, like, some people are like, well, is this Universal's fault? It's not, because they have their own security guards. They have the police that are actually there on property the whole time. They have the team members that are throughout the houses and the scare zone. So there's nothing more they can do other than having like a cop for every single person. Like,
exactly.
That's you know, like, they've done what they can do. It's up to you not to be a complete moron when you go to these things.
Yeah, it's, and one of the things that people are bringing up into it, and there was another post by some just blogger about haunted houses that kind of circulated a couple weeks back about how Halloween Horror Nights has just become one big kegger party. And
well, that was my next question, is do we know how much of a role alcohol has played into this?
We don't know how much alcohol was played into it. I think that's what people will jump on first, though, in terms of criticizing. It's not. But then again, it goes right back to it. It's that person's fault. If they think they need to be drunk just to be there, or they can't, you know, control how much they are drinking, and that's how they get, right, shame on them.
People need to be responsible.
You know, and
we like to have a drink when we go to this sort of thing. It just loosens you up a little bit. I didn't drink to excess or anything like that. It was just, I needed one to, you know, like, you just want to have one in that social engagement to kind of, you know, get you going. And then that's unfortunate, because when I went to Hollywood, I had that issue where they weren't serving in the park, so I was like, well, I don't know what to do, because I'm very anxious, and sometimes I just like to, I'm sound like an alcoholic right now.
Yeah, you really are.
But when you know you're going to be scared, or like it's like when people get on an airplane, some people need the drink to give them the courage to get on an airplane.
Well,
you know?
I mean, people, again, adults, you just need to be responsible for your own behavior.
Absolutely.
How much you're drinking, or whether you're kicking and punching people.
And there's only so much you can blame a bartender in it, too. Like, the person goes to the same bartender, you know, multiple times, the bartender will know. They do pay attention. As someone who goes to Halloween Horror Nights, you know, at least once or twice a weekend, the bartenders get to know you, even if you don't come back. Like, you know, after an hour or two, they'll generally start to remember you. That's any guest service position. You do your best to remember everyone who comes through, especially if you're serving alcohol, because you have to know if you're over serving that person. But let's be real. Some people can be extremely drunk and just not be visibly drunk. So let's say that person that punched one of the girls in the face got one double shot drink at every different bar and never showed it. Like, they might be extremely drunk, but if they're not showing it, there's really not a lot that people can do until they do something stupid like that.
And the flip side of that, the thing that might be like that sucks is that person might not have had any alcohol at all.
Yeah.
So then the people who are being responsible, this is just a person that's irresponsible in general with their own actions. Like, just don't be a jerk. Like, if you know you're acting inappropriately, stop it. Like, but, you know, again, we're talking about a theme park where, like, it seems to be a magnet for people like that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think it's just, you know, Halloween Horror Nights is essentially over. If you are planning on going this weekend, listening to us, know you're going. Please be responsible and keep this in mind for next year with the event. Just know ahead of time. It's another situation, like advice on rides. We can't tell you what you can actually do and what you can't do if you might have some problems going into it. If you have any doubts about how you can handle yourself at Halloween Horror Nights, if you don't know if you're going to be that person who runs away screaming, won't care, or you might get violent, just save yourself the hassle and don't go through it. It could end badly. But
I'll be there Sunday. You can come get scared with me.
Ooh.
Get a little spooked out with me.
Okay, so after that depressing news, we'll end on a bit of a high note. It's a music reference.
A high?
Because it's a high. Well, no. Well, it is a Beetlejuice reference, I guess, but high notes are stuff people sing. And the popular band Walk the Moon, who's best known for this summer's...
Shut up and dance with me.
Yes. If you had ears any time after March, I want to say. I mean, that song might have been around even longer, but it really blew up around March and then lasted throughout summer and is still going. If you've heard Shut Up and Dance, that is Walk the Moon. And they will be putting on a mini concert at Universal Studios Florida on November 7th at 7 o'clock p.m. They're doing it as part of Nickelodeon's Halo Awards, which is their award show that they do on the network that recognizes kids doing great things in their communities by helping and leading others, which I think it's a nice award show, I guess. They didn't have this around whenever we were kids, but I guess it's the 7th annual one, so whenever we were kids, Rhino and I specifically... No offense, but
we were in our early 20s.
Yeah.
I mean, God, 7 years ago, I was freaking 21, so that's not even really saying that much. But yeah, regardless, it's all for a good cause. So they're doing a 6-song set, which, you know, will last about 20 to 30 minutes. So don't go in and get all angry saying, I was expecting a full concert.
They'll sing your song. I'm sure they're going to sing Shut Up and Dance with Me.
They're going to sing that. They're going to sing... You know, 5 other ones.
They got another song on the radio right now anyways.
The only bad part about this is that the host of the award show will also be there to introduce them, I guess, and that's Nick Cannon.
There's so much negativity about Nick Cannon with you guys today.
I just don't really like Mariah Carey that much. I know. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm not into people that are just like terrible people in real life.
But we already pointed out to you that they are no longer together.
Yeah, and so I don't know. But I also only don't really know why Nick Cannon's famous. I know he had a song when I was in like high school, and then he married her, and I think he's like significantly younger than
him. Well, no, I mean
movies, right? A dancing movie.
He started on Nick.
Drumming.
He did Drumline, which was really popular back in the day. Okay. It was.
Okay.
It was, unfortunately.
That was the J.C. Chazé theme song. He had that. His first single after NSYNC was the theme song of that movie. I hate that I know that.
I mean, but I think he had a show on Nickelodeon as well, too. I think that's where he originally started. And then, of course, Wild and Out was where he really broke through on MTV.
I'm not familiar.
Did you just miss like
10
years of pop culture?
I didn't have cable until I was like 18.
Oh my God. It was the show was actually kind of amusing, but Nick Cannon went through this, I want to say 5 or 6 year period where he was just obnoxious because he was everywhere. And I still don't know why he was everywhere.
Right.
He's never really appealed to me. I don't think he's funny.
Is that what he's supposed to be? Is he supposed to be funny?
He's supposed to be a comedian.
Yeah.
Oh, for real? Yeah. I thought he was like a singer. I don't know.
No.
He sings, though, doesn't he? He sings.
I don't know. I know him from comedy and being in movies.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, well, I'm doing that right now. So he started... I mean, obviously...
Yeah, it says artist on Apple Music. He absolutely sings.
Yeah, no, he does. And I mean, he had Wild and Out. He's the chairman for Nickelodeon right now. I didn't even know that.
Wow. Good for you. He gets all the free gack you can eat.
Yeah, he's done absolutely a lot. So he's just never really appealed to me. So he's going to be there. I'll still go to watch Walk the Moon.
The album's good if you haven't heard it. I listened to it on one of our California flights back, and I really enjoyed it.
I just hope he's not doing like a half an hour set first.
Unless
he does only Bill Cosby jokes, then that'll be good. God.
For the Nickelodeon award show, yeah. For the kids award show.
Good point.
It's not too soon. Don't worry about it. So Walk the Moon, November 7th, 7 p.m. Get there early. Secure a good spot. You'll find Rhino, myself there. Maybe JL too. I don't know if she cares. But some of us will be there. Don't find us. That's your prerogative.
Well, unless we need them to, if we get there late and they,
yes,
we need their spots.
Yeah, unless we can wave show up down at the last second, then wave for us in your good spot and we will come take advantage of you. That's sounds bad. That's going to do it for the buzz. Before we do move on any further, this, I didn't find this really buzzworthy because there wasn't a lot, but so New Six in Orlando actually, gosh, I was a week back now that they did it, but they got to go and do a sneak peek of Skull Island really quick. And I mean, they obviously they didn't get to post a lot about it.
Was
but
the
they
ride
did.
Functioning?
No, the ride's not completely functioning yet, okay. But they were able to say a little bit about it. I mean, obviously it's massive, 3 stories tall. They put that there's been 300 people working on the project right now, which that's a ton of people working on it a lot. The ride vehicle is 40 feet long.
Oh, wow.
Which, that's again, that's very long for a ride vehicle for these Jeeps that are going to take you in there.
How long's the Jeep from, like, Dinosaur or Indiana Jones to California? That's probably, like, 12 feet, right? 10 or 12?
I would say maybe 15 at most.
Yeah.
Thinking of my body length.
Yeah, maybe 15. Think about that.
So over times, twice the size.
Jeez, almost 3 times. Woof.
Yeah, I'd say 2.5 to 3 times the size, the length of that. So it's going to be very, very good with capacity. Other things they said on it was some of the features will be old-time radio broadcasters, which you got to love, torches, Kong sculptures, and the sculptures, of course, no surprise, are taking after the Peter Jackson film, King Kong, which I don't think anyone was confused about it. It looks straight out of the movie.
Just so we specify, guys, this is literally what it looks like.
Yeah. So, other things Mike West said, who's one of the executive producers at Universal Creative, there's 5 or 6 scenes with all kinds of varying creatures, foreboding dinosaurs and creatures from underworld that you haven't seen before. Everything is kind of overwhelming, and I think guests are going to be totally amazed. It's really going to be incredible, and the ride will be less than 6 minutes long, so sometime between 5 to 6 minutes. That's a decent length as well. So that's just a little bit of details on Kong Skull Island, obviously. I think this is really the first media that's gotten, that I've seen personally, that popped up in my radar that's gotten to go back and look at it yet. So fingers crossed that someday they'll do another media event where we can go and start getting a peek.
Did they mention whether it was 3D or not? Or
yeah, it is 3D. That was in the original announcement.
Oh, okay, well, I couldn't remember.
There's going to be a 3D section. It's going to be a blend of, you know, actual sets and then also a massive 3D section, which from what I've heard,
is it Confrontation?
No, Confrontation's the old ride before.
You're talking Kong
360.
Sorry.
From what I've heard, it's going to be a brand new film. However, the one thing that they speculated at one point in time was that the Jeeps would be open, so that way you could see all around you. But I've heard the Jeeps are, in fact, closed off. So the 3D sections will just be on the left and right, which does sound very similar to Kong 360. But I read somewhere at one point that they said they weren't rehashing anything from that, so...
Well, that's good, because, I mean, there is that King Kong movie that starts filming, like, next week or something like that, that Kong
Skull
Island.
Yeah, but it doesn't have anything to do with that either.
They're not going to try and tie in at all?
No, it's not being a tie-in. It's just its own standalone Kong attraction coming that takes elements from Peter Jackson's film. But it's not even based on that either.
Good.
So, that's going to do it for everything buzz and buzziness, and now we're going to do our Monster Mash break.
I like the Monster Mash. It's the album that we listened to before the show got started by Boris
Pickett. I'm joking. We don't have the rights to actually play it. We'll get flagged for copyright issues on YouTube for that. So we're not going to play it at all. Instead, we are going to jump into JL's Family's Guide to World Expo. So, JL, for everyone who missed the first round of Family's Guide and any of the articles that have gone up on the website, can you explain a little bit more about it?
Sure. So I've been tasked with the assignment of taking my brood of children to Universal Studios and reviewing it attraction by attraction with each of my children, who are 11. My daughter Ellie, 11, who is probably the daredevil of our family, and Miller, my son, who's 13, and he's pretty, you know, easygoing, just kind of has a attitude where he's willing to go with the crowd for the most part. And then my 15-year-old daughter, Margot, who is pretty much scared of everything. So that's what we've been doing. We've been running around Universal, and after we do an attraction, we come home, I interview them, get their opinions about and their thoughts about the ride, and you know, what that way we can kind of get an idea of what things are like from the kid perspective for all of those of you out there planning vacations for your families with your kids.
Exactly, because in terms of the Diz with Universal, obviously we've really ramped up our coverage in terms of making people more aware of what Universal's like and what Universal has to offer, except the one thing we don't really have, or we didn't until you started writing these, is really that kid's perspective on the attractions, because, you know, I'm not a kid, Rhino's not a kid. Before
in body, anyway.
Before you really came along, we really had Teresa with her kids, but obviously Teresa's too busy being a travel agent and running the Welcome Center to really do anything in park like that for us. And Corey and Julie have Ferris and Finley, obviously, but they're on the young side to the point that they're just now really starting to be able to ride a lot of the stuff at Universal, which would be a great aspect to have too.
Sure.
But they don't go there that often. So really, this has been eye-opening to get that demographic that Universal really is heavily pushing towards, that age group between 8 years old up to obviously 18, and even beyond that, because then they want those 18 to 25 year olds and young adults without kids and all that. So no, it's all been very fascinating, and the New York episode was fascinating. Of course, we'll have a link in the show notes to take you back to find out more about what you and your kids had to say about the New York episode. But this time, we're really going to dive deep into World Expo, which is one of the more exciting areas of the park, in my opinion, because while you have, in terms of attractions alone, we're not even getting into the food and their opinions on that, because, well, that'll be after you do all the attractions. Then we'll have to get more opinions on top of that. And we have two of the biggest attractions in the park in this section alone, with Simpsons Ride and Men in Black. Then you have, technically, Kang and Kodos Twirl and Hurl, the spinner ride. But you know what? Sometimes kids surprise you, and they enjoy those rides because of other reasons. And then also, technically, in World Expo, but not included in this show, Fear Factor Live. Why is it not included? Well, because right now, Fear Factor and Fear Factor has been down for a while because of Bill and Ted. A little while before Halloween starts, it goes down, and it doesn't come back until after. And on top of that, too, there's been the rumors circulating that, of course, Beetlejuice is going down. And once that's down after Halloween Horror Nights, potentially, instead of using Fear Factor, they'll kind of make their own mock version over on the Fear Factor stage, which, as we talked about during the Beetlejuice show, would just be awful in all of our opinions.
Unless they seriously rework that show.
And I don't see that happening. But at the same time, I don't like Fear Factor Live either. So either way, it just doesn't work for me. So yeah, Fear Factor is going to be left out of this section, and we're going to focus on the three attractions that truly matter in here.
Before we do that, I want to take just a minute to have a little side note about, you know, you said it's been eye-opening. It's been eye-opening for me as well, because, you know, even being the parent of these children, and, you know, moms, dads, you know your kids, and you can usually anticipate pretty well how they're going to respond to certain things. But even with that, I haven't been able to anticipate everything.
Yep.
So it's been eye-opening. I learned that just last week, because we did the episode last week on the horror makeup show.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure my kids would just be like, think it was the biggest waste of time. And, you know, I'd have to do something to appease them afterwards for making them sit through it. They loved that show.
I wasn't shocked, but
I was
when you told me
shocked. They loved it. I mean, they had slightly different reactions to it, but well, one, we had a different set of actors than when the three of us went, and I think that played a big part in it. But they really responded to it in a way and to a degree that I had not been expecting. So it's been good for me, because even with these being my kids, I haven't always completely been able to predict what they would think or what they would pick up from the attractions.
Yeah, and I was even going further than horror makeup show. You even said that we haven't done a family's guide on it. Obviously, it doesn't exist anymore. Rest in peace, disaster. But you said,
oh my goodness, that was another one. I thought that they weren't going to be that. Yeah, I still kind of want to go back and write that article about it, because I didn't think that this one was going to be that big of a deal for them. And that was hands down the best experience I've had with my kids on an attraction at Universal Studios to date. We had so much fun together. It was the whole, you know, the making the movie part, and then when you're in the subway and they have everybody participate and put it together. I don't know what happened. My kids just got really into it at the last minute. Miller starts, you know, screaming and you know, pretending to panic for the sake of the movie, to the point that everyone else in the vehicle thought that maybe there genuinely was a problem, you know, because he's, oh my God, we're gonna die, you know, and just like, it was, we had the best time. I didn't see that's that coming. I just didn't see it coming. I'm sorry, what?
I said that's how I was when I was a kid.
Yeah, it was so great. I wasn't expecting it to be such a great family time.
I can't obviously speak for Fast and the Furious Supercharged yet, because it's not out, but I've got to believe, just based on the little bit that I know your kids and basically the demographics that are really into the Fast and Furious Supercharged, I feel like they are, in the end, they're going to like Disaster more than they are that attraction whenever it opens up. And,
we'll
you know, that surprises like that are sometimes things that we forget as adults with Universal, that what we have an opinion on is there's a chance that's always going to be the exact opposite of opinion of the kids that are coming to the parks too. And I mean, it's designed for everyone to enjoy it, but you know, it also, it makes you enjoy the attractions more because you're enjoying your kids' reactions.
I mean, my experience with them, there was huge difference in experiencing the horror makeup show with you guys and then it with them. And really for me, I mean, again, we mentioned the different set of characters, which I think had a drastic effect on the quality of the show. But for me, the enjoyment, the difference in enjoyment was being able to see the look on their faces and how much fun that they were having.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and start talking about the World Expo attractions. And I want to kick things off going in with the Simpsons ride.
Okay. And I'm going to ask your help in this, because I wrote these articles a bit ago, and
it's a little bit out of your head.
You know, me and my old age, the gears in the mind are a bit rusty.
No problem. So recap for everyone, the Simpsons ride, it is obviously the attraction that got rid of Back to the Future. It is a simulator ride that takes place on three different stories in two complete separate theaters. There's, you know, so a lot can happen. This usually has a pretty decent wait because of it. But yeah, it is a giant IMAX motion simulator ride that takes you into a 3D. No, you're not wearing 3D glasses, but it's the Simpsons, not on the 2D cartoon like you see them in on TV, but a 3D version of that. That just adds that little bit of depth, makes the ride bigger. and better. I know this that The Simpsons has gone way downhill in recent years in terms of how it is on TV. And so, like, whenever I was growing up, my parents didn't want me watching it right away. And then, of course, the older I got more into it. I feel like The Simpsons is now something that is maybe watched by people my age and slightly younger. But a lot of the people who were older when it first came out, they've abandoned it because of the quality of the show and how it's gone downhill. And then I look at people like your kids, and I can't imagine that they have ever watched The Simpsons before in their life, have they?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Because of the content or because they just don't care?
Well, they haven't expressed an interest, and I have not encouraged it because, I mean, again, I'm not Mother of the Year. My children have definitely watched some rough things on TV from time to time. But, you know, if they haven't expressed an interest, I do know that some of the humor in the show can be a little off. So it's not one that I'm like, hey, kids, let's sit down and watch The Simpsons. Yeah. But, you know, when I do know that when we were in the queue, that was an opportunity that I took. They were interested in what they were looking at, and they were asking me to explain things about the show. Who's this person? What do they do? What does that mean? Why are they saying that? And you know, they were able to pick up between what they were seeing on the screens and what I was explaining enough of the context of the show to be able to kind of relate to the characters.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've you know, I know everything about The Simpsons. Everything that I can possibly know. I really geek out whenever it comes to Simpsons. And but
sorry,
like
that's a reference to an episode.
I'm trying to talk here.
I'm trying to reference an episode.
Trying to talk. But like I remember the first time I took my family to Universal, and this ended up being one of my dad's favorite attraction, I think, the day that we wrote it, just because he doesn't like The Simpsons either. I mean, he's never, I don't think he's watched a single episode. If I've had it on around him, he's, you know, he's probably just been dazing off into a book or something else, not ever watching it. So I think one of the things about this, really have to be a fan of the show to enjoy the ride, but it will help enhance your experience.
Yes, because you will understand the humor a lot better. You'll understand the context of it. I mean, that's true also just for being in the area, the Simpsons area. There's so much there that, you know, if you're not familiar with the show, goes, you know, right over your head. You don't understand why Moe's Tavern is important and all those types of things.
Or
the Flaming Moe. If you're an adult, you should watch it. The show's stinking hilarious, but it's not necessary. Yeah, you can get enough of the context of it.
I'm going to start with Miller just because I think he had the best takeaway from the entire attraction. I liked his when he talked about the mechanics of the ride. He said it's like this big screen that you go up into and crazy stuff happens. It has lots of stuff going on, and that's why it is so hard to describe. Which is just kind of humorous to me. But regardless, he said without any hesitation that he wanted to do it again because he, you know, he thought it ran the entire gamut because it was funny. It had its scarier moments. But other than that, he really seemed to love it.
Yeah. I guess, do we need to describe? You did describe the ride.
Yeah,
how it's got
yeah.
the full video and everything. I think that he was the one who enjoyed it the most, and he actually was the one who showed the most interest in the queue, was asking me the most questions. You know, they have the videos of Itchy and Scratchy beforehand that they kind of go over the safety rules and all of that. And but yeah, it was he was pretty into it, laughing a lot. And it is. It's a little bit scary. I mean, you go, it's the simulator, and the whole concept is they're going into this, you know, defunct theme park and Krusty the Clown's theme park or something. And the bad guy comes in and tries to...
Sideshow Bob.
Okay. He tries to kill the Simpsons, and, you know, everything goes haywire. You go flying off roller coaster tracks and end up in places, and then Maggie, the little baby, gets radiation something or whatever and grows into a big monster, and is going to destroy everybody. And anyway, it's kind of alarming at times, but he thought that the whole thing was hilarious. Yeah. He was into it.
And Margot said that she enjoyed it too, but she apparently felt a little sore after the ride.
Okay, so Margot sometimes struggles with back pain, and this one really messed her up. Like, I think it is a very jerky ride with the simulator that goes up, and it's trying to, again, simulate you flying off of roller coaster tracks and landing down harshly on other surfaces and, you know, spins and turns and all this kind of stuff. It's very jerky, and you're on hard plastic seats. There's no cushioning. And I think that it was too intense for her to really enjoy it as she should. She just kind of came off of it. I mean, like, I know she understood the story, but she just primarily focused on the fact that her back was in pain.
Well, and your other daughter also had neck pain.
Yes, and Ellie is not one that has back problems or neck problems. Ellie's my one that goes all over the place on roller coasters and, you know, free fall drops. And
there's something really, like, a funny story here, because when I was a kid and I did Back to the Future, same attraction housing, I remember the warning for it being like back problems, pregnant mothers, whatever. And I remember the first thing I said to my brother, like, I was super happy I did this ride, but I turned to my brother afterwards and I was like, man, no wonder why they say if you have any back problems, because this ride gives you back problems. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember coming off, and as I was probably maybe 14, 13, 14, maybe even 12, I don't know. It was somewhere in that, around like 7th or 8th grade. And I remember thinking, like, that hurt a little bit, you know?
It definitely does.
It's the same kind of ride vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that there are some rides where they, you know, they're all trying to cover their butts, and they tell you, don't go on if you're pregnant, if you have back pain, neck pain. And sometimes it feels like maybe that's a little excessive. But this one, please listen to what they're saying. That's a real warning for this one. I was sore when I came off. I wasn't that crazy about the attraction for other reasons primarily, but this one definitely jerks you around. It's hard to overemphasize that.
I completely agree. I give it my stamp of approval, though, but I'm not in your family, so that doesn't matter. that's just me. Let's move on to the other Simpson attraction that's in the area that...
Well, did you want me to say what my opinion was?
Did you not?
I didn't.
Oh, okay. Your opinion.
My main issue...
You just kind of said it at the end.
Well, I said I wasn't crazy about it for other reasons. The main reason I skipped the Simpsons ride... I mean, it is jerky and it's a little bit painful on, you know, your back or whatever. But I am willing to endure a certain degree of that if it's a really good ride. Like, I love Space Mountain, even though it's jerky. This one, though... I just get nauseous. It's that simulator motion stuff. I do fine on roller coasters, but I do struggle with simulators. And this one's...
There's no air in there.
This one's particularly bad.
Yeah. And because I don't know if it's just the age of the technology in there. I mean, the ride in general, it opened up in 2008. It switched over from Back to the Future. So it technically hasn't been there that long since they upgraded it. But... in both theaters, the projector has this soft focus on it that just makes it a little more disorienting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just in IMAX in general, you can always see that effect where it's a little bit soft, but then this one's a little extra soft, and that makes a big deal.
I have this theory too about it, is that this one for me is the one that I'm like, if I haven't taken Dramamine, I can't do it. And I think it's because... I didn't have this issue when it was Back to the Future, because Back to the Future was real stuff in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, it was a real environment, whereas this is an animated environment. So for me, there's a mental disconnect. Like, I know I'm not on that roller coaster. I know I'm not doing this. And I think that makes me a little more nauseous, because I don't know where to look in the screen necessarily, because I'm looking around like it's a cartoon show. I'm looking for the cartoons. Like, and so I think you have to... My advice to somebody is that I find that helps if you just focus, like, right in front of you. Yeah. Don't try to look at everything. Just look right at the screen.
Yeah.
And it'll feel a little better.
And it sucks because this ride is designed to look all around on that screen and
There's
see all
lot.
The little hidden references. But this is one attraction that I think, besides the ride vehicles are so old since they've been there since Back to the Future, and they're still very jerky, and, you know, they almost need – completely replaced and bring it up to date with newer technology. But this could really stand from an addition of having 4K projectors in there,
that'd be cool.
And a nice 4K image on there. Because, you know, Despicable Me looks great. Spider-Man looks great. Mm-hmm. Gringotts looks great. All these rides that really take use of the newer technology that's come out, it looks amazing. And this is one that's dying for that. And then I think it would also make people a lot less sick. Because I know from my time at Forbidden Journey, whenever people came over and they're like, oh, it's a moving motion simulator similar to Spider-Man and also kind of like The Simpsons. Oh, I can't do this. And I got so sick on The Simpsons. But it's like, how did you do with Spider-Man? You know, that was okay, except for the part where you spun.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I don't understand how the moving one, you felt more sick than the one that's stationary. But that's more because I don't get motion sick easily. But yeah, I think with the addition, sharpening up the screen a little bit, maybe making the ride vehicles a little smoother, this could end up being more enjoyable for everyone in the family.
Add some breeze in your face, for crying out loud, too. Jeez.
Yeah, that might help.
I need a nice cool
something.
Yeah.
So let's move on now to Kangen Kodos, Twirl and Hurl, the spinner ride,
the spooky spinner ride
that came as part of the addition of Springfield, USA. Kangen Kodos, of course, are very well known from the Treehouse of Horror episodes. There we go, Halloween, coming right back into it there. The greatest Simpsons episodes that have ever existed.
What was cool in California is they played the Halloween Treehouse of Horror, like, soundtrack is what they played throughout their Springfield. They don't do that here. I don't know why. It's such a cool, like, sound to it, but maybe someday.
Yeah, so obviously this is just your normal hub and spoke spinner ride. However, it's got a little bit of a difference because based on your controlling motions up and down, you might trigger RFID sensors that will include characters doing little funny quips in there. And of course, Jennifer Tilly moved from the Simpsons ride and she does the pre-show warning in the Simpsons ride. She also lends her voice to the pre-ride at Kangen Kodos too. So there's a lot to enjoy about this ride. What did your family think of it?
Well, it took us a while to get a handle on the story behind it. That's not as easily grasped, but so I don't know if anybody cares. The idea is that Kangen Kodos that they've landed and they're tricking park guests into getting in these UFO vehicles because the guests think that they're getting on an amusement park attraction. And once you're on the ride, there's an announcement that, you know, you've been had. And what actually is happening is an attack on Springfield. And if you ever, basically you're a hostage in an alien abduction. And if you want to be released, you have to attack the citizens of Springfield, which is where the part that Craig is talking about comes into play, where you have to try to line up the height of your vehicle with the sensor. On the outside of the spinning part, there are tentacles from the alien, and there are sensors placed at different levels on the tentacles. And if you do happen to line your UFO with a sensor, it will spin the particular citizen on that tentacle, and then they come out, you know, saying like, no, or, you know, whatever kind of exclamation happens. And so that wasn't clearly explained to us in the line. I don't know if they just didn't have the speakers loud enough, but we were still a little bit confused about what the goal was. I'd actually tap a team member on the shoulder and say, hey, can you explain how this works?
I'm going to throw it out there. I don't think I knew that full story about it.
I didn't know that at all. Yeah.
And I was there for one of the media introductions to it whenever it first opened up. I didn't even know the story.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, there it is. And so again, it's not clear. If you're not looking for this, you might get on this ride and not even actually understand the fact of how you're supposed, that there's a point to going up and down. You might, you know, just, you can go up and down and you might not figure out that there's some kind of goal here. So, we got on and, you know, my kids usually have different opinions. This one, they all kind of were the same on. I I tried to hype it, you know, like, yeah, we're going to do this. Let's get, you know, all of the sensors and have everybody react. And, you know, you're a mom, you try to get your kids excited about it. They were just kind of like, whatever, this is just Dumbo, you know, for little kids, you know, they just were not really, all of them across the board. They were like, all right, we went on it. We spun around a few times and now we're off. I mean, I was in the UFO with Miller. The girls were in their own and, you know, he was trying to work with me and like, all right, mom, we'll do this. And, going up and down and, it's hard too. First, you need to know you can't get every single sensor because they're so spaced at different places. You have to, and it took us a while to figure that out, that you have to kind of find a sensor a few tentacles away and then aim for that one. You can't get one that's, you know, pretty close up to you. You'll just miss it completely. So Miller's also my perfectionist. And so I think he was a little bit frustrated that he was not, you know, able to get the marks as easily. But for the most part, they were pretty bored. But again, you know, they're the tweens and the teens, and spinning around isn't like a huge thrill for them anymore. Yeah.
I mean, I can actually speak on behalf of Corey and Julie on this one point. I know they went to Universal at one point in time, specifically just to ride E.T. because Ferris loves E.T. However, I don't even think they made it to E.T. They ended up going on Ken Kodos like three times because the kids loved it so much, and then they just left. So
maybe this one's oriented towards much younger kids.
I think that's where I love this ride. This is something that you can take your little kids on, and they'll enjoy the spinning aspect of it, where if you're an adult, you can, and you like The Simpsons, you can enjoy those little references and those little tidbits that you hear as you are spinning around and in the line itself. And, you know, I enjoy this one as an adult, but yeah, it is, I don't do it. I maybe do it once every 6 months at most.
I mean, they didn't hate it. They were just kind of indifferent. They all pretty much said, yeah, we would do this again, but this isn't one that we're going to line up for. You know, if we can walk on it, then we'll do it. We're not going to go out of our way to try to make sure we get on this ride. But, you know, if there's no one else there and we've got time to kill, then, you know, they don't object to it. It's just not something that they found particularly exciting.
Yeah. Well, I think the last one will be a little bit more enjoyable to them. I haven't read this article in a while, so we'll find out as we are going through it. But of course, Men in Black Alien Attack, what some would say might be the crowning achievement of the World Expo area.
It's Men in Black Alien Attack.
Oh, I thought it was Alien Encounter. I'm thinking of the other ride. I learn something every day. I love this ride.
You didn't know we were talking about this ride?
No. I knew we were talking about the ride. I thought the last word was different.
No, Men in Black Alien Attack.
Sounds better.
So this is, we've talked about it in depth on the show many times. It is a moving dark ride where there is spinning, but it's essentially that Buzz Lightyear style, the Toy Story Midway Mania. You have your gun and you are going through. It starts as you're training to shoot aliens, but hey, you know what? Alien attack just happens on the city, so you got to bypass your training and you just got to go out there and get to it and start zapping aliens. And that is the essential plot of it. And, you know, you get a lovely ending with none other than Will Smith himself.
Big Willie style.
Overall, I think all three of us in the room can say that we love this attraction.
Totally.
So JL, let's start with your opinion on it before we get to your kids.
I love this ride. It is a bit fast. It has some spinning in it, and nevertheless, I don't get motion sick on this one. I love the interactive part of this. I love how it can be something that your vehicle tries to work on together. In that aspect, it sort of was a fun thing for our family. I know you have your individual scores that you're trying to get when you are getting, you know, shooting at the aliens, and you're trying to get your score to beat the other people in your vehicle. But at the same time, there's portions of the ride where you are trying to work together to mess up the other vehicle that's on the track that's next to yours. So, and we had a great time. I love the game aspect of this. Yeah. And it's also very visually fun as well.
Well, Margot, she did note that she would repeat the ride in the future. But one thing that did leave an impression on her was the strobe lights and a lot of the spinning. Despite mm-hmm. it appealing to ages, that's something that stuck out to her. And I think that is something important to think about for anyone. You know, you never know who's going to be affected by strobe lights. And,
right.
I struggle with the spin sometimes. Yeah. Like, it's not terrible. It's hard because it's that part when you go to shoot at the other car. And yeah. if the car mm-hmm. across from you is carrying smart or people who have done it before, they'll actively continue to shoot your car because you get more points, but also because it stops you from spinning. So that's always my goal. So sorry for anybody who faces off against me.
Yeah. And she also wanted to make sure that everyone knows, no matter what they say, you are going to want to push the red button.
Yes. This was funny. Okay, so Margot got very competitive.
Yeah.
When it came to this game, and she was all about trying to get the most points, and she had, I think I remember telling him when we were in the line that even though they tell you not to push the red button, that you definitely want to try to be the first person or push the red button because you would get muko amounts of points. But I liked that. I liked it that she was Margot is my teenager, and in that she is usually my one that is most apathetic about things. You know, she's like whatever yeah. all the time. So it was really cool to be in an attraction where she got into it and got excited about it and was like, I'm gonna push the red button or whatever it is, I don't care. I like the fact that she was involved and engaged.
Yeah, so Ellie seemed to really get a kick out of a lot of the aliens going through, and it'd be hard to keep her away in the future, but at the same time, she loved the aliens, but I guess she kind of thought maybe some of the aliens were a bit scary, especially in the darker sections of the ride.
She's 11.
Okay.
So now when she is saying that she thinks that they are scary, she is not scared of them.
Yes.
She is, like I said, my daredevil.
She's just saying they're
She's spooky. She's trying to kind of put out a warning to other kids who might scare easily. She does not scare easily. In fact, when we go through haunted houses, I will put her in front of me because she laughs at things and I scream and cry. But the aliens are a little bit intimidating to look at. Certain ones are crazy looking, and it is a dark ride. So for a child that maybe is afraid of monsters in their closet or under their bed, this one might be a little bit too intense
I mean, that finale is the strobe light with all the smoke and sure. that giant one that's over your head. So I can see how that could be a little like...
The concept of the ride is New York is being attacked by aliens.
Yeah.
So that's not supposed to be a walk in the park experience. So.
Yeah. Maybe Central Park.
Well, oh God. Well, Miller's your video game child.
Yes.
How did he feel about this one, really? Obviously, he loves it, and, you're shooting. It is a game, but how was his aim? Because he seemed like he wasn't that great at it, was he?
Well, it doesn't...
I don't know.
It's hard to aim with those blasters, and... your dot is not always where you think it's going to be. It takes a little while to get oriented.
Yeah.
And I think he struggled a little bit with that and found that frustrating. Like I said, Miller is my perfectionist.
Yes.
And he always expects to excel at everything that he does. And so when he doesn't, that can cause a bit of an anger issue.
That's me.
But he wasn't... I do want to... You know, he did have a good time, and he does want to go on it again. This ride has really great repeatability.
For sure.
Yeah, when you start learning the tips and tricks of like where to shoot and how to shoot and you know, you were saying like he's the way he is with the gun, like you get better at that. The more you do it, you learn those tricks.
This is a ride that we actually could do every single time we go to the park and it wouldn't get old.
Yeah.
And so while he did find the blasters a little bit frustrating, he also wants to do it again because, you know, he wants to get the better score and he wants to hit that red button before Margot does.
Fantastic. So looking at World Expo as a whole, we're saying obviously the best one, as long as your kids do meet the height requirement for Men in Black, as a general whole, though, families will enjoy Men in Black Alien Attack the most, followed by the Simpsons ride, as long as everyone can handle the intensity, followed by, unfortunately, Kanga Kodos at the bottom, aiming more towards younger kids.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at least that's, again, how it was for my family, and we really do cross the gamut as far as personalities, and Men in Black was definitely the big winner in that area. Simpsons was, you know, somewhere in between. There are things that we liked about it and other things not so much. It's one that we will probably pass more often than stand in line for.
So you say like Men in Black would be the most accessible for family across the board?
I think so. I mean, again, there are the factors that you need to take into account, like the strobe lights or if you have an easily startled child. But again, even with that ride, it's not like the aliens are directly in your face.
Yeah.
You're a good distance from them. I think that one's just a bit easier to manage than something like The Simpsons, that where the vehicle's jerking all over the place, there's nothing you can do with it.
And yeah,
it's big and overwhelming.
Awesome. Any other thoughts at all? No?
I don't think so.
Well, thank you so much for, first off, taking your kids and having all these experiences, but then sharing it with everyone else. So I hope it's ending up being very helpful for any families going to Universal in the future.
Yeah, me too.
If you're on the fence about planning that trip because you don't know what all they'll actually be able to handle, I hope this helps to get that good grasp of what you definitely need to do and experience while you're there. And overall, in general, I have to just say thank you again, JL, and thank you to everyone out there who took the time to put up with this on this very spooky episode with, you know, everything that's been going on with the talking stuff. I forget
everything that's been going on.
I forget
with
where I was going with all that.
Time to say goodbye, Greg.
It is time to say goodbye. It's been a long one, but packed with a lot of information. So thank you again for everyone taking the time to listen. Remember, anything that you want to find out about this show can be found in our show notes page, which you'll find at disunplug.com, where the Blue Universal section. That's where all the information from today's show, links to all your blog posts that you have on your family guides, as well as any of the news articles we talked about that are relevant to your lives and anything else in general for this show, all the other shows that are on our podcast network, including the Disney World Edition, the Trip, Disneyland Edition, and Connecting with Walt. So you can find all those there, as well as our contact information to get a hold of us at uopodcast@disunplugged is our email. And then, of course, we're on all different forms of social media that if you still don't know where we're at, come on, find us. It's about time. Make sure you're subscribed to us on iTunes as well as YouTube, and you're leaving great feedback on that, because that's the only way we can get better in general, is if you're telling us how to be better. So definitely leave that feedback and subscribe. And again, thank you everyone out there. That's going to do it for this episode of the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition. We'll be back next week with another episode, but remember, Monster Mash is universal.